Today is June 1st, the 21st of Sivan, and we are finishing Malachim Aleph Perek Bet. And we are on the last killing after Yoav and Aviatar, and now Shimi ben Gera. So let's read it. Vayishlach HaMelech v'yikra l'Shimi, v'yomer lo, b'nei lecha bayit b'Yerushalayim, v'yashavta sham v'lo tetze misham ana v'ana. So the king sent, and he called for Shimi, and he said to him, build for yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there, and do not go out from there here or there. So the Hebrew there is ana v'ana. So it seems, just to pay attention, that from this command, he's kind of under house arrest. He has to stay in his house. We can all relate to this from Corona of what he needs to do. And it seems like he really can't go anywhere. Lama zayin, v'ya biyom tzitcha v'avarta et nachal kidron, Yadoa teda ki mot tamut damcha yebiroshach. So it will be the day that you go out and you pass over the Kidron Valley. I meant to do this before. I think it's worth it to take the time to see it on maps. Can you guys still see? Can you see my new screen where I'm Googling Kidron Valley?
Yes.
Okay. So let's just look at Wikipedia. See if they have a broader spectrum. They do not have a broader spectrum. Okay, well.
Robert Alter describes it as a brook that runs at the foot of Jerusalem to the east.
Okay.
So Shimi would have had to cross it to go back to his native village.
Right. So that's essentially what I wanted you to see, but it doesn't, I didn't look it up beforehand, I apologize, and it doesn't show. So, I have to find, oh, here it is. Okay, you're back to seeing the Pesukim now. So he would, in order, Shimi, remember, is a Benjamite. From him, the Midrash tells us, which we're going to see a little bit again, that Mordechai comes from him, which is why David HaMelech let him live in the first place. So, in this pasuk, it seems that you can't go anywhere, but really what I'm going to focus on is that you don't go east, you don't go over this valley, which would then lead you into the territory of Binyamin. And then you're going to die. You're going to surely die, and your blood will be upon your head. You caused your own death. Lamed chet. Ve'yomer Shimi l'melech, tov hadavar ka'asher diber Adoni ha'melech. This is good, what my lord the king said. Ken ya'asa avdecha, thus will your servant do. Ve'yeshev Shimi b'Yerushalayim yamim rabim. So Shimi indeed dwelt in Jerusalem for many days, which we see in other places means can mean years. Ve'hi miketz shalosh shanim, ve'yivrechu shnei avadim l'Shimi, el achish ben ma'achat l'melech gat. Ve'yigidu l'Shimi l'mo, hinei avdecha b'gat. So it was after 3 years. Okay, so Shimi followed the rules. He was in Jerusalem for 3 years. And at the end of those 3 years, two of his servants fled to Achish, the son of Ma'achah. If you remember, we've encountered him before. He's the king of Gat. And it was told, and they told Shimi, saying, behold, your servants are in Gat. So if I had prepared and had a good map for you, then you would see Nachal Kidron on the east, and you would see Gat, the area of the Plishtim, on the west. So it's unclear, really, what Shlomo's command is to Shimi, and he might have thought, based on the specific mention of passing the Nachal Kidron, that going to retrieve his servants in Gat might be okay. So that's what he does. Ve'yakam Shimi ve'achbosh et chamaro. Shimi got up, and he saddled his donkey. Where have we seen this kind of language before? Someone saddling their donkey? The Akedah with Abraham. Also, in a couple weeks, we're going to see it with Bilam. Not his chamor, but his aton, his female donkey. We also see it with Yosef when he goes to get his father, the Merkava. These are all people who you would expect to have servants to do it for them. I couldn't find anything relating this Shimi to those incidences, but maybe we're getting a sense that Shimi was materialistic, wanted his slaves back. Why are his slaves running away from him? Nothing really addressed this, but it could be, what's it called in a court of law when you bring certain evidence to sort of make someone look in a worse light. Do you know? Does anybody know? Do you know what I'm talking about, Deborah? Is that a thing, or Ruth? I don't know. So it could be that the Torah is just giving us these little details, kind of to so that we get, if we look, read between the lines. Shimi is the type of person that his servants run away from him, and when he wants to bring them back, he goes himself instead of sending other servants. Maybe there's a lack of trust in his household. It's kind of building our suspicion about Shimi. That's just me speaking. I didn't see any other sources validating that. But I think you can't help but be prejudiced against Shimi a little with some of these facts about him. So he went to Gat, to Achish, to request his servants, and Shimi went and he came and he brought his servants from Gat. Mam alef ayugad l'shlomo, ki halach Shimi mirushalayim Gat v'yashav. And it's told to Shlomo that Shimi went to Jerusalem, to Gat, from Jerusalem to Gat, and he returned. V'yishlach ha-melech v'yikral Shimi. So again, the king is sending and calling for Shimi. V'yomer elav, and he said to him, halo hishbaticha, v'ashem, v'aid v'cha lemor, b'yom tzitcha v'alachta ana v'ana, yadoa teda ki mot tamut, v'tomar alai tova davar shamati. So he said to him, did you not swear, I caused you to swear, I made you swear before God, and I will testify, I will witness to you, saying that on the day that you leave and you go here or there, you will surely know, because that you will surely be killed. And you said to me, good, this thing that I'm hearing. And why didn't you guard the shvua of Hashem? Ve'et ha-mitzvah asher tziviti alecha, and the command that I commanded you. So Shlomo here is putting it into a more severe light. So it seems like he left and he came back. But Shlomo is saying, you actually broke a Doraita Torah law, maybe even two, of breaking your oath and ignoring the command of the king. Memdalar ve'yomer ha-melech el Shimi, ata yadata et kol ra'a asher yadala v'avecha, asher asita l'David avi, v'heshiv Hashem et ra'atcha b'roshcha. So he said, the king said to Shimi, you know all the evil that you knew in your heart that you did to David, my father, and Hashem will return your evil upon your head. V'hamelech Shlomo Baruch v'kisei David yanachon lifnei Hashem ad olam. And the king Shlomo was blessed, and the throne of David will be set or established forever before God. So here's our henchman again, Benayahu, who the king commands. And he went out and he fell upon him. And the kingdom was established in the hand of Shlomo. Okay, there's really not a lot of commentary on this. I guess the story speaks for itself. So we're going to go straight to the Malbim. So the Malbim first has some questions. Hashelot b'mashakatu v'lo tetze ana v'ana, mashma l'tshum tzad. So at first he says you can't go here or there. That seems to refer to any side. U'mashakatav v'yom tetcha v'avartat nachal kidron, but when it just warns specifically about the Kidron Valley, mashma she'eno mushar rak al tzad shel nachal Kidron. It seems like Shlomo is just warning him about passing the valley. Lo al tzad acher, not on any other side. U'bepasuk membet, tafas rak mashe katab yom tzeitcha v'halachta ana v'ana. But when Shmuel reminds him of his oath in pasuk membet, he does not say anything about the specifics of the Kidron Valley. He just says the more general, if you go either here or there. So those are the Malbim's questions. Vayomer lo b'na lecha bayit, he said to him, build a house. Hine azhara zo haita chatuma. This warning was a seal. Shemamashe katuv b'na lecha bayit v'yashavta sham. That which he said, build yourself a house and dwell there. Mashma shelo hikpid rak sheikba sham dirato. It seems that Shlomo is saying he just wants to make sure that his main dwelling place is in Yerushalayim. It's sort of like when people have second homes in a different state and they have to make sure they spend X number of days in whichever state it is that they want to pay their taxes in. So that's what the Malbim seems to be implying here with Shimi that he just have his primary residence in Jerusalem. And if he goes somewhere and comes back immediately, then he doesn't have to be careful about that. But we could say that when it says you can't go here or there, that would be a complete going out where he would uproot his dwelling from Jerusalem. Umnam, however, when it says on the day that you go out and you will surely die, it seems that on that very day that he would leave, he would be obligated in death. So on the one hand, it seems like a kind of vague warning about just passing the Kidron Valley and making sure his primary residence is in Jerusalem. And on the other hand, it seems like the minute he leaves the Jerusalem precinct, he's liable for death. Af she'achzor le'sham. He needs to go back. And when it says, when you go out and you pass over the Kidron Valley, mashma shelo hikpid rak im yavor nachal Kidron, shederek sham hayuhochim lebachorim. It seems that he's only particular if he passes the Kidron Valley because that's the way to Bachorim, which is where the original incident with Shimi was, where he cursed David in Shmuel Bet Tetvav Kafkimo. But if he goes out a different way, not over the Nachal Kidron, he won't die. Ulam, however, don't go out either direction. It seems to say that he can't go out any direction. And it all depends on the reasoning of this warning. Shim haya derech ma'asar, sheyeshev b'makom echad. That if this warning is coming as a way of house arrest, that he should stay and dwell in one place, muzhar shelo yitzei l'shum tzad, rak yeshev v'masro. He's being warned that he can't go out any direction and he needs to stay under his house arrest. V'im hu rak mipnei shechashdo, sheikshor alav mered bein b'nei shivto. But if this warning is only because there's a suspicion that he would create a conspiracy and rebel with the members of his tribe, the Benjamites, then the warning would only be not to pass over the Kidron Valley to the people of his tribe, lo al makom zulato, and not on any place besides that, she'in chashash mered v'kesher, where we wouldn't have any suspicion of a rebellion or a conspiracy. Okay, so we see how confusing it is and how Shimi may have misunderstood. Ve'yakam Shimi, Shimi goes up. Hine Shimi samach b'zeh. Shimi relied on this. She'eno mushar rak la'avor et nachal Kidron. He interpreted the command that he just shouldn't pass over the Kidron Valley. Mi'chashash merit, from the suspicion of a rebellion. Lo la'lechit le'gat shehu b'ma'arav Yerushalayim. And not that he shouldn't go to Gat, which is to the west of Jerusalem. U'me'arei ha'amim she'en chashash merit. And the cities of the nations where there's no suspicion of a rebellion. And not only that, but he's forced to leave in order to seek out his servants that fled. And we see this through one, he went to Gat, and he thought he was not being warned about Gat, which is to the west. Bet shehalach el Achish, that he went straight to Achish. Lo el b'nei amo, he didn't seek any Benjamites out. He's only going to the head of the Plishtim. Gimel shehalach levakesh et avadav. He went to go seek his slaves, his servants. V'nir'eh be'alil shelo halach likshor kesher. And it would seem he had no intent of any kind of conspiracy. He had a very specific goal. Dalet v'yelch shimi v'yaveh et avadav. He went and he brought back his servants. Harei halach v'shav miyad. It was clearly for one purpose only. He went and he came back immediately. Lo avar amanat shetzivuhu ledor b'Yerushalayim. And he did not transgress over the command to dwell in Jerusalem. Vayomer alav halo hashbiticha b'Hashem. Behold, I made you swear to HaGad. Amar le halo nishbata b'Hashem. You swore to God. V'hayalach aledayek v'lo levakesh hateirim ayudei safek. And with that oath, you need to be exact and not seek out permissibilities by way of a doubt. ki halo va'id becha b'yom tzeitcha v'halachta ana v'ana mot tamut. I testified that on the day you left and went out, here or there, you would surely die. Ratzon lamar shemima she'amarti b'yom tzeitcha mot tamut. He wants to say that that which Shlomo said, that on the day you go out, you'll surely die, mivora shahitaha azhara afal yitziah lefisha'a. It should be explained that it was a warning even on a temporary leaving. And when he said, and you can't go here or there, it should be understood that it was a warning even if you went to a different place, into a different side, different direction, in a different place. And you replied, it was good what I heard. And you accepted this oath that was on my mind. And you needed to be sensitive to the more stringent aspects of the oath. And not to go even to Gat, even for a short amount of time. I think what the Malbim is saying is that we have a concept that when you have a doubt, the direction we go, whether it's to the stringent or to the lenient, depends on if that doubt is rooted on something that's a Torah law or Doraita, or if it's rooted in something that's a Darabanan, a rabbinic law. So if you have a doubt on a Torah law, then you have to follow the stringencies. And if you have a doubt on a rabbinic law, then you go with the leniencies. So Shlomo, the Malbim is explaining that Shlomo is stressing that this is a Torah law, and if you had any doubt about what this oath meant, you need to stick to the stringencies. Okay, now we're going to see one little radak, where he says, Asher yada levavecha, that your heart knew, referring to the time when Shimi cursed David, Shlomo's father. So you knew in your heart. Afal pi shera'u rabim b'sham'u ma she'asita le'David avi. Even though you did what you did in public, you cursed David, my father, in public, and everyone, and a lot of people saw it, heard it, and saw it. Ata be'atzmecha teda machshavatecha. You yourself know your thoughts, ra'a, your evil thoughts. She'ita choshev alav yoter mima she'amarta b'ficha. That you thought about him even more than what you said with your mouth. And he said some pretty awful things with his mouth. He called him a bli'a'el, which is like the worst kind of idolater. Okay, now the Malbim on that. Ataya data et kol hara asher yada levavecha. You know all the evil that was in your heart. Ratzon lemar ki b'ma shekilel et David, haya yichol lemar shehaya shogeg. That is to say, that which he cursed David, he could have been able to say perhaps that it was accidental. Ki chashav shedavid nirdaf mipnei avonotav ve'elokim azvo. Because he thought that David was being chased because of his transgressions, namely Bathsheba and other killings, and that God had abandoned him. So doing something by accident in halacha doesn't mean always that you didn't realize what you were doing. You could very well realize what you were doing, but you're doing it for the wrong reasons. So meaning, if it's Shabbos, and you think it's Sunday for whatever reason, and you purposely turn the lights on, that's an accidental sin against Shabbos because you thought in your heart of hearts that it was Sunday. Okay, so Shimi thought in his heart of hearts that he was being pursued and God had abandoned him, and therefore he was able to curse him. And so even though he cursed him on purpose, the reasoning for his curse made it an accidental shogeg. Ulam masha ana Hashem liyadcha sheta'avor al hashvua v'tamut al yidei bano. But, however, that which Hashem seems to have made it, that you would transgress over your oath and you would die by way of David's son, Zeheid ki adal vavecha min hara'a. This testifies that you were not accidental in your sin of cursing David, that it was really bemazied on purpose. Ratzon lomar, shelo haya ma'ase shogeg belo yidi'ah, rak bil vavecha yada az she'ata osa ra'a vahi tamezid. So, the incident was not accidental without knowledge. Just in your heart, it's known, it was known then that you were doing evil and that you were doing it on purpose. And therefore Shlomo can say, Hashem has returned your evil on your head, because Hashem knew what your thoughts were and that it was an on-purpose sin of cursing David. V'hamelech Shlomo Baruch, and the king Shlomo was blessed. V'lo yichashev lo lachet, and Shlomo should not be considered to have sinned. Mashagram lecha hamachshol hazeh, that this stumbling block was put in front of you. So meaning you can't blame Shlomo for reading into this oath in too many details. It's all on Shimi's head. He's blessed. Shlomo is blessed. Ki hu me'et Hashem ayde avonecha, because this came from Hashem by way of your sin. V'zeh ad shekise David yeh nechon ad olam, to the point that the throne of David will be established forever. Achar she Hashem rav riv cherpato, because Hashem is fighting the fight of those who cursed him. Okay. Membav ha-sheilot, lama kefal shenit v'hamamlacha nechona b'yad Shlomo. Why does it repeat that the kingship, the mamlacha, is firm in the hand of Shlomo? Shekvar amar lamala pasuk yod bet v'tikon malchuto me'od. It already said in pasuk yod bet, if you remember a long time ago, that Shlomo's kingship was firmly established. So just noticed that we have the mamlacha, and here we have the malchut, okay? So they both have the shoresh of melech, but they're in different forms. And they also, but nechona is the same shoresh as tikon, however that's pronounced. Vayitzav hamelech, the king commanded, ubezek kiyam tzva'at aviv, and here he has established the what his father commanded him, that was hinted in what he said, and you know that which you should do to him. So there wasn't an explicit command of what to do to Shimi, but Shlomo has carried out what his father hinted at. And the kingship or the rulership was firm in the hand of Shlomo. He'ida katuv she'ad hina hayu mastinim b'machuto. So the pasuk is testifying to the fact that until this point, there were people who were against his kingdom, namely Shimi, I guess. Ki be'emet Yoav ve'Aviatar chashu ra mitzad Adoniyahu. Yoav and Aviatar had plotted bad from the side of Adoniyahu. V'Shimi zera amal mitzad b'nei yimini. And Shimi had planted, I think worked hard to plant from the aspect of being a Benjamite. And now in all of their killing, nechona hamamlacha, the kingship is firm. V'yesh havdal bein melucha ubein mamlacha. So he's going to explain the difference between these two words. Shenose shem melucha hu mitzad hamelech. So when we talk about the melucha, we're talking about the king. And that we already established, that Shlomo was accepted as king, and it was very well established. Aval nosei shem mamlacha hu hamedina. But when we talk about the mamlacha, that's talking about the state. Ubemedina hayu adayin orvim. And in the state, there were still outbreaks. Ve'ata, and now hamamlacha nechona biyado, en satanu pagavra. Now the state is firm in his hand. Nothing bad is going to happen. So even though Shlomo had been accepted by the vast majority of the king, there were still these little outbursts and flames to put out. Now with these three gone, there are no more outbursts and flames. It's a peaceful kingdom, peaceful state. Okay? So now this Shem Mishmuel is going to address poor Benayahu ben Yehodaya, the henchman who has to keep going out and killing people, who we've only heard wonderful things about. So how can that be? Why does Shlomo put him up to that? Nir'eh al pi ma she'shamati mi somebody, his father, the Admor. This is the Shem Yishmuel. Zachut, tzadik, something, something. A really good person who I think is his father. Lama b'kol harugei malchut she'harag Shlomo, hamelech alav shalom. Why in all of these killings of the kingship that Shlomo wanted to be killed, Adoniyahu, Yoav, Shimi, Kativ, Sheshalach, et B'nei, Ho, Ben, Yehod, Yada, Veif, Gabo, Veyamot, Why did he send out Benaiah ben Yehoiada for all of these, and he fell upon them and killed them, and they died? Hello, Benaiah ben Yehoiada haya al hakriti va'apliti. He, this man, was part of the kreti upleti. I pronounced that wrong. Shamru zichronam livracha, where the rabbi said shehem ha'orim v'hatumim, that these are the orim v'tumim, the clothing of the kohen gadol. So, meaning, I think what he's saying here, it's not so relevant to the point he's making, but we do know that Benaiahu was a kohen, and here Shlomo is sending him out to kill. So there's actually a whole discussion, I think we talked about it last week, maybe that Vayif Gabo, when he fell upon him, he wasn't actually dead, so he had time to leave before he would actually be dead, and he as a kohen would become tame because of a dead corpse. That's redundant, because of a corpse. So how could Shlomo send him out to risk this tuma, this ritual impurity? I think it maybe is what he's asking. Imkein lama bachar laharoget anashima ela ayde isha chesed. Why would they choose him to kill these people when here Benaiahu is being called an ish hachesed, the man of kindness? Why would they choose someone like that to make these killings? Upeiresh sheharugei machut. Shayu mordim b'machut haytai chola lehitna ganev b'levav ha'horeg gam ketzat sin'a u'nekama ketava anoshi. This is really a high level. So the explanation is that those who kill for the kingship, so you could call them snipers even, maybe, and they're killing people who were rebelling against the kingship, so they could become confused in their heart, the kill of their killer, a little bit of hatred and revenge that is human nature. Okay? So meaning, when you're commanded to kill for the king, as much as you might support the king and love the king and be on the king's side, when you do his bidding in killing, you cannot contain any of the hatred or personal revenge in this act of killing. Alkin bachar davka be'isha chesed. That's why he had to choose a man of chesed. L'man yet naki al tarat ha-kodesh l'shem shamayim levad. So that he would be clean on the purity of the holy, and he would be doing this only l'shem shamayim. And the last Rosh Yetevot is divrei pi chacham chen. The words of the mouth of a chacham are chen, graceful. Okay, so this is the uniqueness of Benaiahu and why he was chosen to carry out all these killings, because he was able to hold in his heart a pure l'shem shamayim for why he was doing it, and he didn't hold any personal sense of hatred or revenge against any of these men. It was all l'shem shamayim. Okay, so now, what happens to the kingship after these three men, specifically Shimi, are killed? So this is from the Gemara, and it's going to introduce us to the relationship of Shlomo HaMelech and Shimi, which we've talked about before, that Shimi was his Rebbe, in a sense, but we're going to talk about how that bodes for the kingship. So the Gemara says, from the days of Moshe until the days of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the author of the Mishnah, we do not find unparalleled greatness in Torah knowledge and unparalleled greatness in secular matters, including wealth and high political office, combined in one place in a single individual. Okay? So, meaning, there's always a separation of powers, where you have the person who has the Torah knowledge, and then you have another person who has the secular greatness. So you have the Torah greatness and the secular greatness, and Moshe held both of those strengths, and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi also held both of those strengths. He was very wealthy, and he met with the rulers of Rome, and he was also clearly an unparalleled Torah scholar. So from Moshe to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, there never was one person who embodied both of those. And then it goes through several other people that they say, well, look at this person, they had both. And then it mentions a competitor that, no, really was greater in one of those areas. So this is one of the many lists. So, ha, hava Shlomo. But what about Shlomo? He seemed to have great Torah knowledge. We know he was the wisest of all men. And he also was a king. He had all the secular power. Hava Shimi Ben Gera. No, there was Shimi Ben Gera. So this tells us that Shimi Ben Gera actually knew more Torah than Shlomo. The Hakatle, but Shlomo killed him in the beginning of his reign. So therefore, Shimi Ben Gera no longer existed, and then Shlomo had both of those powers. So they explain, they qualify it, they say, we meant to say that from the days of Moses to the days of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, there was no single individual who reigned supreme in Torah and greatness all of his years. So the fact that Shimi Ben Gera existed in the beginning of Shlomo's reign means that it wasn't all of his years. Okay, so now we're going to look at Pasuk Aleph of Perek Gimel, and I'm not going any further than this. So it says, "Ve'itchatein Shlomo et Paro Melech Mitzrayim." So you see, the translation says Shlomo became allied by marriage to Paro, the king of Egypt. It looked like Shlomo married from the pshat of the pasuk, the Paro, the king of Egypt. Ve'vehem aligned. Ve'ikach et bat Paro, and he took the daughter of Paro. Ve'vi'ah el ir David, and he brought her to the city of David ad kaloto. Until he had livnot et beito, until he finished completing his own house, ve'et beit Hashem, and the house of Hashem, ve'et chomat Yerushalayim saviv, and the walls of Jerusalem. So the Gemara says, so meaning we just finished Perek Bet with the demise, the killing of Shimi, and the first pasuk of Perek Gimel, we see he marries the daughter of Paro. So the Gemara takes that connection and says, Rabbi Chiya bar Ami said in the name of Ula, one should always live in the place where his teacher lives. Thereby he will avoid sin. For as long as Shimi ben Gera, who according to tradition was a great Torah scholar and teacher of Shlomo, as we saw, was alive, Shlomo did not marry Paro's daughter. Immediately after the Baba relates the death of Shimi, Shlomo's marriage to Paro's daughter is recorded. Okay? So, let's see what happened on that wedding night, because that's really where we see how detrimental Bat Paro is to Shlomo and how it relates to David. So again, from the Gemara, I'm just going to read the English. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani said that Rabbi Yonatan said, anyone who says that King Solomon sinned is nothing other than mistaken. As it is stated, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. It's a very bizarre pasuk, because it seems like we're stating that Shlomo was less than, to a certain extent, his father David. So the Gemara goes, by inference, Shlomo's heart was not equal to the heart of David, his father. However, he also did not sin. However, how then do I establish the meaning of the verse? For it came to pass when Shlomo was old that his wife turned away his heart after other gods. So it seems like Shlomo, in his old age, with all of these wives that he had, that they succeeded in turning his heart away from Hashem to other gods. That verse is in accordance with the statement of Rabbi Natan, as Rabbi Natan raised a contradiction between the two parts of the verse. On the one hand, is it written, for it came to pass when Shlomo was old, and his wives turned away from his heart after other gods. On the other hand, isn't it written, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father, indicating that Shlomo's heart was not equal to the heart of David his father, however, he also did not sin. It's a little confusing how the Gemara uses that logic, but we'll have to trust it. Rather, the verse says as follows, for it came to pass when Shlomo was old that his wives turned away his heart in an attempt to spur him to go after other gods. However, he did not go after them. The Gemara asks, isn't it written, then Solomon built an altar of Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, in the hill that is before Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon? So Molech was the king of Ammon. It's also one of the things specifically forbidden in the Torah, the act of Molech, which would be transferring children over the fire, some kind of child sacrifice, indicating that Solomon did in fact stray after idols. The Gemara answers, this can be understood that to mean that Shlomo sought to build an altar for idols, but not built it. Okay, so that's sort of an introduction to what we're talking about, that Shlomo has this weakness somehow that David didn't. I saw one explanation that said that David's, when it says that Shlomo wasn't equal to David, it explains that David's heart was such that Hashem came first before anybody and anything. Hashem was first before his wives. Shlomo had a harder time prioritizing where his love should come first, whether it was to Hashem or to his wives. He was more swayed by his wives than David was. Okay, so later on in that same Gemara, Gemara Shavas, it's specifically about our Pasuk, Rabbi Huda said that Shmuel said, When Solomon married Pharaoh's daughter, she brought to him 1,000 musical instruments and said to him, "This is the way we do it for this idolatry, and this is the way we do it for that idolatry." And he did not protest that talk. Rav Yehuda said that Shmuel said when Shlomo married Pharaoh's daughter, the angel Gavriel descended. Before we get that, we're going to expand more on the wedding night of Shlomo and Bat Paro, maybe in a future class. But what really struck me about this Gemara is that on the day that that Shlomo married Paro's daughter, the angel Gavriel descended from heaven and implanted a reed into the sea, and a sandbar grew around it, growing larger each year, and upon it the great city of Rome was built, which became God's instrument to punish Israel. It was taught in a Braita on that very day that Yeravam introduced 2 golden calves, one in Beit El and the other in Dan. A single small hut was constructed, which was the first house constructed there, and that was the inauguration of Italy of Greece. So that's not so relevant to ours, but I just wanted to show these two acts, and that Shlomo marrying the daughter of Paro seems to be equated in this Gemara with Yeravam putting the 2 calves in the state of Israel, as opposed to Yehuda. Yeravam rebelled against Shlomo's son Rechavam, and he seceded and created the 10 tribes in the state of Israel. And he put 2 golden calves, very ironic and interesting, and they became the centers of worship in the northern kingdom. And on that day, Italy of Greece. So Rome was planted, literally, on the day that Shlomo married Paro's daughter. And I just want to compare this with this pasuk in Yirmiyahu, where it says, "For this city has aroused my anger and my wrath since the day they built it until this day, to remove it from before my face." So this is Yirmiyahu prophesizing about the destruction of Yerushalayim. And the Gemara there says, one verse states, "For the Lord has chosen Sion." You probably know this pasuk, "Ki bachar Hashem b'tzion." He is from Tehillim. And one verse states, "For this city has been to me a provocation of my anger and my fury from the day that they built it until this day, so that I should remove it from before my face." Rabbi Yeshua replied to them, "Here, the verse in Tehillim is referring to the time before Shlomo married Paro's daughter, whereas there, the verse in Yirmiyahu is speaking of the time after Shlomo married Paro's daughter." So what's going on here? It's much worse than we think, even. On the day Shlomo HaMelech married Paro's daughter was ordained the destruction of both Batei HaMikdash, both temples. Meaning, the Gemara is telling us, based on this pasuk in Yirmiyahu, that Shlomo marrying Paro's daughter on that day completely changed Hashem's mind for the first temple and was ordained that it would be destroyed. And on the day that Shlomo married Paro's daughter, Rome was literally planted, which then sprouted up to destroy the second temple. So this act of marrying the daughter of Paro sent our future into turbulence, both for the first temple and the second temple. Please God, the third temple will be built speedily in our days and last for eternity. Okay. And then next week, we're going to focus more specifically on the Beis HaMikdash. We're going to continue a little bit with Shlomo and Bat Paro and the day of the dedication of the first temple and how David plays in that and David's role in the temple in general. Okay, thank you.